How to avoid training scars this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to the Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to talk about training scars. Now, all across the country, because of our current situation, ranges are closed, so more people are looking for other ways to maintain their firearms proficiency. And one of the key ways that you can do this is by dry fire at home. Now, we just recently did a review on the Dry Fire Mag, and I'm going to post that up here in the corner or down the description below, so you guys can check that out. But we are going to talk about how you conduct training in this to avoid causing yourself problems down the road. Now, I'm a huge fan of dry fire because you can get a ton of practice for no money at all. You've already bought the handgun. You're just sitting there and cycling the weapon, and it actually can be beneficial with a new weapon because it smooths things out, gets it broken in. And generally, in order to fine-tune and take a skill from new to automatic, it takes thousands of repetitions. Now, it takes thousands of dedicated repetitions done correctly to ingrain that skill. And then as we go on through our lives, we need to continue to burn those reps in order to grease the groove, to strengthen those neural pathways, and make sure those connections stay in good shape. But somewhere along the line, we can allow bad technique and bad form and bad habits to creep in. And then through those thousands and thousands of repetitions, we are training the bad habit. We are greasing the groove and building the neural pathways that lock in that bad habit. That is a training scar. So we end up with an unintentional habit that can be performed automatically without any conscious thought. Now, a great example that I will talk about from history is if we go back to when most police departments carried revolvers. They would go down and they would qualify on their range, and generally at the end of a qualification session or a practice session, officers would have to police up the brass on the range. Brass is a trip hazard. Brass just causes problems on the range, so you need to tidy up. You need to police call your brass. So that ends up with a lot of walking around, bending over, reaching underneath things, or if you are on an outdoor range where you have gravel, it's just a pain to go pick the brass up. So police officers figured out very quickly that you can fire your shots, and then when you go to reload, you can dump the brass in your hand, stick it in your pocket, and then reload your revolver from your pouch. That's great. Now you don't have to bend over and pick up the brass. You can just dump that out of your pocket. And a lot of officers believe, oh, well, you know, it's just practice. When I go out on the street and I'm in a real gunfight, I'm going to do what they trained me to do, which is dump my brass on the ground and reload, because obviously that is much faster than taking your brass out and maintaining control of it and then sticking it in a pocket. The problem is that officers fire their weapon in training and in qualification far, far, far more often through a career than they fire on street in defense. That's great because the gold standard is for an officer to finish their career and have to never fire their weapon in defense of their lives or in defense of others. But there's still that possibility that that's going to occur. That's why we carry firearms. And what they found out is debriefing officers after shootings is that they would fire their revolvers, and if they emptied the cylinder and needed to reload, they would dump the brass in their hands, put it in their pocket, reload from their pouch, and go on exactly like they did in training and in qualification. Because they had burned those reps in training and qualification, it became automatic, and that's what they did. Now, obviously, we do not carry revolvers on the street. At least the vast majority of us do not. There are still officers that carry revolvers as backup guns, and there are quite a few armed civilians out there that still carry revolvers. A revolver is a perfectly viable self-defense tool. So my recommendation to you, obviously, is if you are training with a revolver, make sure you allow those cartridges to fall on the ground. Now, when we get into semi-automatic handguns, like the Glock that I have here, obviously there's no cylinder, there's no real way for me to dump the brass out into my hand, but we can run into the same thing when we do a magazine change. Let's assume that you are on a very structured, rigid firing line where you can't go forward of the line, or let's say even you're on an indoor range. Many indoor ranges that I've been to, it's a huge pain to be able to get permission to move forward of the line if you knock something off the table or if you drop something forward of the line. And magazines have a tendency, when they are empty, to bounce a good distance, especially the nice polymer Glock magazines. So I can definitely see shooters getting into the habit of, when they're fire and when the slide locks back and it's time to do a magazine change, to just eject the magazine into their hands, put it on the table or put it in a pouch or a pocket, and then retrieve the fresh magazine and reload. That's great, except if you are training for defense, that is not the fastest way to gas your gun up. We don't really practice magazine retention in the law enforcement or in the civilian world, because it's highly unlikely you're going to be in a situation where you need to reload a magazine from bulk ammo and continue a fight. Generally, when we are out on the street, when we're going about our daily lives, whatever, all the ammunition that we have access to at the time is already loaded in magazines. So we are free to discard empty magazines because they are no help to us at all. For police officers, when it's done, crime scene will pick your magazine up and enter it into evidence. For armed civilians, same thing. If you dump a magazine on a city street, don't worry, the crime scene technician will come pick it up for you. We'll take care of the magazine. Assuming it's a lawful shoot, you'll get it back later on. For soldiers, Marines, people in a combat zone, that is a different matter. Very often they practice magazine retention depending upon what unit and what your purpose is at the time. So removing the magazine and stashing it in a pouch before you reload may be necessary. But be careful that you are training with a purpose. So if your purpose is to train magazine retention because you want to use magazine retention in a gunfight, then that's fine. Go ahead and do that. If you intend to jettison your magazines onto the ground when you are in a gunfight, then you need to practice jettisoning your magazines onto the ground, because you will not have the mental capacity to not do what you train to do and do something different. You will fail to that lowest level of training. So what we need to do is, if you're in that situation, you need to make accommodations to allow you to drop that magazine. So if you're in an indoor range, a lot of indoor ranges that I've been in have tables, at least commercial ranges do. So bring yourself a shoebox or something. Set it on that table so you can bring the gun back into your workspace. You can dump that magazine and have it fall into the shoebox while you are drawing your fresh magazine out. That will allow you to still work in a tactically significant manner, a tactically correct manner, and maintain control of that magazine and not have to get everybody to go cold because you keep kicking your magazine forward to the firing line. Same thing if you are on an outdoor range that has a rigid firing line, do something to capture that magazine. And now, this is not an end-all be-all of training scars, but what I'm trying to get you to do is be conscious of exactly what you are doing and what the steps are. And if you are performing a step in training that you would not perform in a gunfight, you're developing a training scar, because what you are training is what you will do in a gunfight. So that is a really important thing. Now, to circle back around to dry firing, one of the reasons that we did the dry fire mag review, and one of the reasons that I'm really interested in this and I really like this magazine, is because when we insert this magazine into the handgun, I now have a device in the handgun that will keep my trigger live and allow me to continue to cycle the trigger. So as I'm going through my dry fire routine, I can keep pulling the trigger over and over and over again. This is a semi-automatic handgun. So when I'm training live fire. I'm repeatedly pulling the trigger with the same grip, with the same sight alignment, with the same sight picture. Normally, traditional dry fire, you press the trigger and then you have to cycle the handgun and then come up, get a second sight picture, and fire again because you have to reset the trigger. So having something like this allows me to get those meaningful reps in and do it in a closer manner to what I would do with live fire. And this prevents the possibility of me training in to where I draw my handgun, punch it out, fire a shot, come back, and then cycle my slide and eject a live round onto the deck when I didn't need to do that. That would be embarrassing to do on the range. It would be possibly life-threatening to do in the real world when you need multiple shots and you fire a shot and immediately come back and cycle your slide. Not a good thing. So we need to try to find ways to perform that out. Now, I'm not saying you need to go buy a $100 mag to be able to dry fire. That's just not going to be reasonable for some people. If you dry fire a lot and you are serious about your training, then this really isn't that big a deal to purchase. But what you can do when you are dry firing is you can fire your shot, you can get your second sight picture, and then you can mentally end the drill. So I followed him down. Okay, I'm scanning. All right, I'm good. Okay, drill's over. Now I can come back, cycle the slide, and then I can come back up and repeat again. Dry fire. Okay, follow down. Scan. Scan. Okay, we're done. Drill's over. Cycle the slide. Now, you would definitely want to repeat this with multiple shot live fire drills out on the range. That way you are burning in multiple shots, bill drills, so you are not constantly just firing one shot. But this is behaviorally compliant because if you are on the street and you fire a shot, and you're still up on the target and you're still looking at the target and the target needs another shot, you're going to fire another shot and you're going to fire another shot and you're going to fire another shot until they come down. And then, okay, once you've identified they are no longer a threat, then you can break contact with the target. So we want to do things that will break our consciousness from, okay, that's the drill is over, now we can go into an administrative task. That way we don't tie that administrative task on the end of the drill. Very often, even during live fire drills, what you will notice shooters will do is if I tell you, okay, you're going to shoot two shots to the body, one shot to the head, okay? Well, the shooter will come up and the shooter will go bang, 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 and then the holster up. Okay, that's fine because the drill was two shots to the body, one shot to the head. So I want you to execute the drill as instructed. However, in the real world, two shots and one to the head may not have ended the threat. You hope it would, but it may not. So you need to remain up on target. You need to scan. You need to look. You need to be prepared to fire the next shot. And then consciously end the drill. And then holster up. So we want to go through this time and time again. That way we're burning the reps correctly and we are not doing things that will ingrain habits that when we get out on the street or we're in a defensive shooting or we're in a competition that will cost us some serious trouble. So just be conscious of how you are developing your training, how you are setting up your drills, and then how you're executing them, especially when we are doing things in the house in a dry fire situation. Now, because a lot of us are limited from how much live fire we can do right now, be very, very, very careful that when you are handling your handgun in a dry fire situation, that you are handling it in the same manner that you would handle a live handgun, a handgun that is loaded and hot and ready to go. Now, I realize that we are violating one of the primary tenets of firearm safety, which is never point a weapon at anything you don't intend to shoot, because when we are dry firing, we are specifically pointing an unloaded handgun at something that we would not want to put a bullet through. I don't want to put a bullet through the wall in my office. However, I have a target hung up there and I do dry fire against that wall. Now, it is an exterior wall. It has brick on the outside of it. There is no way that a 9mm handgun bullet is going to penetrate through that wall and become a danger to someone on the other side. However, I do not intend to shoot my wall. So we do need to accommodate that, and we need to make sure, all right, although I am doing dry fire training, I'm still handling this like it is a live handgun. I'm not pointing at the dog. I'm not letting kids walk between me and my target. I'm not running into any of those situations. I'm not goofing around. I'm not getting excited because I got a really, really quick, clean draw and do some weird finger twirl handgun thing. You guys laugh. But I have seen some really, really stupid crap when somebody gets excited and they have a gun in their hand. So those are just some tips to get meaningful training, but let's prevent those training scars. Let's make sure that we are focusing on our training and that we are doing it in a conscious and competent manner. So one quick thing before we go, when we did the dry fire mag review, one thing that I did not really cover is the integration of the dry fire mag with the Mantis X. Now, we are almost to the point where we're going to do our review on the Mantis X. I've been using this quite a bit now. This is an electric training aid. It works both with dry fire and with live fire. So with the Glock here, I can pop off my tack light, and then the Mantis will slide onto the dust cover and attach onto the light rail groove. And it actually, with my Safariland holsters that are designed for the X300, I can holster the handgun with this on it. If you run a Kydex holster or something that is a little bit more form-fitting, or you run a holster for a slick handgun with nothing on the light rail, then they do make base plates for your magazines that the Mantis will go on. And they do replace the factory base plates, so it works with the dry fire mag as well. But I can take the Mantis and I can attach this, and it's an accelerometer built into it. So it will track my draw out of the holster. It will listen for the striker fall. And I found that with the dry fire magazine, although it takes the striker out of the equation, you're not actually manipulating the striker when you're pulling the trigger. The Mantis will pick up the click from the dry fire mag. You have to set it to a higher intensity. But it does somewhat reliably pick up the click to the point where I can definitely use it for holster draws and other repetitions. And again, I don't have to worry about ingraining that cycling the slide every time. I really, really, really like the fact that when I use it to do my draws, then I can draw, click, I can scan, and then I can holster up. And that is exactly what I would do if I was shooting live fire. So the Mantis X works great with the dry fire mag. So again, it is an expensive training aid, and it is by no means required for dry fire practice. I would much rather you guys go out there and do your dry fire practice old school with none of this fancy stuff and do it more often than think you have to wait until you can buy the fancy stuff to go out and get some good dry fire practice. One benefit of the Mantis, though, is it works on pretty much everything out there. They even make a stick-on Picatinny rail, so if you really, really wanted to, you could stick a Picatinny rail on the bottom of a revolver grip and use the Mantis on a revolver. But it works great for semi-automatic handguns. It even works on ARs or other rifles that have a rail on it. So that is the Mantis. We will have a full review of the X10, which is the model that we have here, coming very, very soon. Last thing, this is the Glock 44. We have probably close to 2,000 rounds through it now. I finally got the threaded barrel that allows me to put the Gemtech Outback 2 suppressor on it. So we got to the range and made sure that it runs fine suppressed. Now we're ready to drop the full review on the Glock 44. I hope to get that out later this week. So that should be coming very soon. And we do have some more long gun content coming. US Optics sent us one of their foundation scopes. So that is in the T&E period right now. We're getting some shots down range and some video footage with that. And we will have the review of the foundation coming very soon. That's it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything we've covered, please send it to us on Facebook or Twitter, or drop it in the comments section down below. I love to hear what you guys have to say. And I really want to hear, what is your dry fire routine? How do you get that practice in when you can't get to the range? And how often do you dry fire even when you can get to the range? So please drop a comment down below. If you guys have liked the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if you want to know how to support the videos that you know and love, please come check us out over on Patreon. We would love to have your support over there. And until next time, get out and shoot.